Okay.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Well, one of the subjects that we could look at this evening for meditation is to think about gardening. Yeah, that would be a bit interesting. Meditation is a lot like gardening, actually, which is very, very neat, because when you go into a garden, it's a very peaceful place, isn't it? It's a very beautiful place, too, which is a nice place where you can just relax, calm down, and just where you don't have to be anybody. You can just go, nice place just to chill out. And all the gardens in the world are different. Some of them are very formal, neat, clipped boxes. Some of them are very wild and rugged. Some of them are very, don't have any plants at all, and rock gardens and all kinds of things. So everybody's style of garden is different. But that doesn't mean that they're not good in their own way. And that's a big advantage with meditation. So it's kind of settling into your own space when you meditate. And it's a place where you can relax, where you can chill out. You don't have to be anyone. That's really wonderful in this day and age, because so busy and so hectic in the world, and everyone has so many obligations and so many pressures. So being in a garden is really, really nice. It's a place where you can relax. And a meditation is somewhere you can do in your own home. You don't even have to go outside, because summer at the moment is very hot. A lot of us can't go outside when it's too hot, and the garden's all hot and dry. It's like what most of us are in daily life. And it's nice with the garden, and it's nice and cool, and you can nice and water and everything else, very cooling places. So that's one of the nice things about meditation as well, is it's a system where you can just relax and cool down and refresh and everything else. And it's very, very important to just incorporate into our life. Because being around nature is very relaxing. When we're hemmed in all the time by buildings, we kind of get cramped in our own little world and we feel trapped. Whereas in a garden, it's more open, and in our meditation, it's more open too. There doesn't have to be any boundaries. Well, that was my introduction. That was 2-3 minutes. Now, how can I spread this a bit more? So the good thing about this is you can make it whatever you want it to be. There's no real strict form to doing this in meditation or in gardening. So if you like roses, fantastic. If you like palm trees, wonderful. If you like cactus and everything else, that's great too. Whatever is right for you, in a way, is what you have to discover. Because you more or less know automatically what is right for you and what feels good and what you're comfortable with. But sometimes we don't always have the confidence. We don't always know what we're doing. So to find that confidence is part of the skill. That's part of what meditation helps us do. Because we're more comfortable with ourselves. That sort of makes sense? Yeah, looking good? Okay. So when we go into meditation, when you go into a garden, a lot of it depends really. The first thing that you look at in the garden is really reflects the kind of meditation you're likely going to have. So if the first thing you look at is all the weeds and all the messy stuff and all the things you got to do and this and this and this, you're probably not going to have a lot of fun in your garden. It's probably just going to be another job. And that's the thing, is some people unfortunately take that into their meditation as well and make meditation a job. And that's not fun. Meditation, that's chill out time. It's a time when you can just relax and find out what's there. You know, explore it. Go for it. It's really interesting. I don't do this talking thing much, so why don't we just jump in and do it anyway? Alright, so first rule is, if we're going to sit down, we have to stand up. So everyone want to stand up and give yourself a bit of a stretch and to help settle in? Yep. Just adjust any of the clothing that you want to do. If anything's too tight, best to release it. There we go, you can sit back down again. Gets out all aches and pains and build up that we've already kind of got, especially if you've already come here from work or something like this, you've probably already got a lot waiting to be let go of. So first thing is to find a comfortable position. You can have your feet on the floor. You don't really have room to cross your legs, but some of you at the back can do that, so that's great. And what we do is just close our eyes. And the first thing we do is just spend the next few minutes paying attention to ourselves. Just how we feel in the chair, how we feel in our clothes, and just relax. The next 5-10 minutes is just settling in. It's very useful just to use your breathing to help you relax as well. So just try to soften the breathing or to become aware of the breathing. Just start to pay attention to your feet and your legs and see if you can relax those a bit more. If you need to adjust them, this is the time to do it. Pay more attention to your upper legs and see if you can relax those well. moving to your stomach. A lot of tension's held in the stomach. Just relax it now. Relax your chest and your shoulders. These places where there's so much tension. Hands and your arms, so they're in the best position that you can sit comfortably. How's your face? Are you clenching your teeth? Just relax. Pay attention to your breathing. And just imagine that you can fill your entire breath, your entire body with your breath. And as you breathe in, just relax every part of your body, as if there's no tension or boundaries there at all. And as you breathe out, let all that tension go. keep checking the body to see if any tension comes up, and just let it go. Now, start to imagine a place that is a garden, a place somewhere that's just for you, somewhere peaceful and quiet, somewhere beautiful. What is this garden like? Are there flowers? Are there trees? Is there flowing water? Spend a few minutes just exploring the space. now find somewhere where in this garden where you can sit down and relax, where you can rest. This is a place that's peaceful and more safe than here. Somewhere nice and quiet. There's no one else around. It's wonderful and peaceful. You don't have to be anyone in this place, and it's a place where you can just settle down and be who you need to be. Spend a moment exploring how you feel in this space. Are you happy? Are you calm? Or are you busy? It's okay. But just use the time just to relax in this place. You can use your breathing again if that helps, or focusing on your body and helping that relax. But just continue to be at ease and calm. With every breath that you breathe, become more and more calm and relaxed. old aches and pains of the day just fade away. And you don't need them anymore. If you find your mind is wandering away, just bring it back to your space, to your garden, and spend a few more minutes exploring it so you can come back to your center. Now imagine a place in this garden where there's water. It might be a lake, or a fountain, or a stream. Move over to that water. And when you see it, imagine passing away all your troubles to that water and just letting it flow away. All these things you don't need to hold on to, and all these things which are troubling you, but you just want to put them down just for a little while. If you're very imaginative, imagine touching the water, and on the touch of the water, feel it just flow out. Now, for the last few minutes of the meditation, spend some more time exploring this garden. What is the sky like? Is it vast and open? Are there clouds? What's it like? What surrounds the garden? Is it a forest? Or hills? Or a wall? And what else is there in your garden? Are there trees and flowers? Spend the next few minutes just exploring the space that is unique just to you. back to the space in the hospital. Come back to your body and become more aware of your surroundings. For the last half a minute, just focus on your breathing. And then we'll ring the bell and we can open our eyes. So, spend a minute just to relax, just to stretch. You can stand up, give yourself a bit of a wiggle again, get the blood pumping, and you made it. I think actually I might have taken you a bit over half an hour, so that might be a thing. Yeah. We started at 7:17 and it's now 7:55, so we've done pretty well. Yeah. While we're waiting for the lights to come up, is there any questions or comments about the meditation? Anyone have a good time? We have one at the back.
Venerable, you seem to prefer visualization rather than focusing on breath or body.
Mm-hmm. I personally, actually, when I'm meditating on my own, I don't do many visualizations at all. I mean, I find them very effective. They're very settling and calming, and they're very good for helping to create a space within yourself where you can really just value that. It's a tool you can use to really find a place within yourself where you can just relax, and it's your own personal space. There's lots and lots of visualizations, so I've got a lot more of them. But I enjoy them, you know. Sometimes it's good to have a little bit of a variation because I find that a lot of people, when they're focusing on the breath, it becomes quite difficult. There's lots of distractions, there's lots of worries. It's not something we do all the time, so it's not something we've already got experience with. And the problem is that because it's not something we're really used to doing, we don't really want to do it. It's a bit boring, isn't it? Be honest. So visualizations kind of help engage us a bit more. But some people like breath meditations, that's great. It really what works for you. Does that kind of answer the question, or?
Thank you, Venerable.
Yeah, no worries. Any other thoughts or questions? Huh?
On your previous occasion here, you used an analogy with cooking and food.
Mm-hmm.
This time it's gardens and gardening.
Oh, don't worry, I've got more. See, what's good about all this is finding different avenues where this becomes applicable in real life. Because in cooking, you know, it's always different. Whatever, you don't know what you're going to cook tonight, most people. It's kind of like, you know, open the fridge and, you know, you're sort of thinking, oh, damn, I've got 10 minutes to make something and the kids and this and this and this and, you know, whereas you can actually get into cooking and really enjoy it and relax it, and you can get into gardening and really cook, enjoy it and relax, and you can make it what you want it to be. That's kind of the message that's really behind all of this, is it is what you make it in many ways. But the point is, what's slightly, if we go slightly deeper than that, it gets to a point that we make it something so we can let it be, so we can step back from it, we can just relax, and it will take care of itself. You know, it's like we put everything in the slow cooker and away it goes. Don't have to worry about it anymore. We planted everything in the ground, we fertilized it, we set it up, and now we can let the trees grow and enjoy them. And meditation life is much the same. The problem is that in today's world in particular, you know, we really don't have much of an avenue for that. Even if we're later in age and in our retirement and everything else, we still have lots to do, lots of obligations. We don't really have much of an opportunity to kind of just enjoy the moment. Kind of click? As you feel that? Yeah. So, you know, these little moments when you kind of looking and going, we've already have enough sort of moments, enough things we've done, enough things we've had to do, so we can use sort of time either in meditation or in the garden or in the kitchen or in your workplace, anywhere that you are, in your arts and crafts room, if you like arts and crafts and have a hobby space, you can do that too. Because meditation has a lot in common with these things. You notice that particularly painters get this a lot. I don't know if there's many artists in the room. I come from Kalamunda, so I'm more grown up around artists. When you're focusing on what you're doing, you're not intensely focusing on it. You're just seeing it as it is, and then you're paying attention, transferring it to the canvas or to the medium of whatever you're building, whatever you're painting. And in that, your necessities, your needs, your agendas, your worries, your troubles, and all the things we've got to worry about, well, how we're going to pay the bills, how we're going to organize the kids, and oh, I've got such and such a pickup in half an hour, and I've got an appointment then, and I'm going to do this. Forget about it. That's the time where it's legitimate to just be you. The challenge is, unfortunately, in this today's world, most people don't have very good relationships with themselves. They're not used to spending time with themselves. And when they sit down, it's kind of, what do I do? Oh dear. You know, and there's lots of difficulty. We have very bad relationships with ourselves. So starting to get to know ourselves and learning how to relax is very important. Any more questions? Okay, interesting. Do people like the meditation? Mm-hmm. Are getting good feedback? Okay, great. Is it something you feel you can use? Yeah. See, what the beauty of these kinds of thought formations, these little thought worlds we create, is we can use them. At home, we can use them on the bus, we can use them, you know, even if it's just 5-10 minutes in the office, on our break, we can just find a place where we can relax, and in this particular little world we've created, it's a place we know we can just relax and we don't have to be someone. Because that's one of the nice things about being a monk, is even though, you know, we've got the robe and the shaved head and we've got all these things we have to do and all these social services and there's a role, we don't actually have to be anyone. That's really nice. Anonymity is great. And most people think it's the weirdest thing ever. It's wonderful to go back to our little huts and just be nobodies. It's wonderful. Sounds a bit of a strange thing.
Sounds good.
Okay, so for our first timers, how did you guys find it?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
The builder came into the garden now, so
It's part of the interesting things, because also in these spaces, what comes up are the things that we're usually most worried about. This is kind of a little crossover into dream space kind of thing here. So some of these things that come up in our dreams are things which we're really worried about. But in meditation context, we don't always use it in this way, but it's a way that you can use it as a way to kind of, in a more holistic sense, you can find a space where things that need to come up that you need to address, you can address them there. So you can use meditation for creativity, or you can use meditation more for the calming, the settling, and more sort of insightful, you know, life-changing kind of things that help you develop in your life. So very sort of multifaceted tool. Okay, anybody else? Come on, I know you got some. What made you become a monk? The more I look back on it, the more I really don't know, quite honestly. These kinds of things, when you look at it, there seems to be a lot of lead up towards this sort of thing. And it's kind of like, it felt like it was my decision back in, you know, 2012 when I applied to come to the monastery. Oh, look, it's your evacuation notice. It's my opportunity, right? But, you know, I look back at it now and it's just sort of just a natural development towards that. And that's really nice. I mean, I ran a business for a long time. I sort of had my own house and my own garden and everything else, which I very much enjoyed. And these are little things which I can learn in real life and bring into meditation. So all these little things, so it can kind of cross over. What you learn in, you know, cooking in a kitchen, you can also use to learn in your meditation. So it works both ways. So what made me become a monk? No idea. It's easier that way. Hey, anyone else? Any challenges or any... Oh, yep.
Favorite type of meditation?
Now that's actually a more interesting question, because this is where visualizations become interesting, because what's right for you now is not necessarily going to be right for you in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, tomorrow, next year, next month. It's different every time. Just like in a garden, the seasons are always different. It's always different. And that's what makes meditation more interesting too, because it's a bit of an exploration. You have to find out where you're at the moment. What do you need? Do you need to relax a bit more? Or are you feeling a bit dull and you need a bit more joy and inspiration and uplift and enjoy the beauty of your space? What do you need? That's really part of where it gets interesting. Because unfortunately, a lot of styles of meditation can be very robotic. You know, we're taught a method or a style or everything else, and it might work a few times, but we try to recreate that style, and we try to do like a machine. And the more and more we try and control our meditation or anything like that, the more unpleasant it becomes, basically. The more stressful it becomes. And you get this weird feedback loop. And it's actually supposed to work that way. The way it's set up is the more enjoyable and the more peaceful it is, that's the feedback mechanism that lets you know you're on the right direction. But the more stressful you get, that's generally the sign that you're moving in the wrong direction. But most people, unfortunately, when they start to get into that stressful space, you know, they start to feel anxious, they feel they can't meditate anymore, or they try harder, which is what we do in the real world, basically, is when we have a deadline and we need to get something done, we need to do it harder and faster and now. And that mechanism really does not work in meditation. And your mind and body sends you feedback sort of saying, please don't do this. This is not fun. If meditation is a chore or anything else, kind of moving in the wrong direction. So meditation's fun. But it's really all how about you use it in the situation you create. Is there a hand up or are you stretched? No.
Awesome.
No? Okay. I'm looking for opportunities. Okay, got another one?
No.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Okay. Actually, I was thinking about something, but when I was much younger, I used to swim a lot of laps.
Okay.
And I just used to just swim laps and laps and laps, and people used to say, isn't that boring?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, you wouldn't know it now, but I also used to jog. And when I just used to jog as well, and then when I started meditating, I realized that it was the, you know, the breathing, when
yep.
you're swimming laps and watching the line on the bottom of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was jogging, it was like the rhythm of my feet and my breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, that was actually meditation for me back then, and that's what I used to enjoy about it.
Yeah.
I didn't used to have to think, I just used to just keep going.
Well, you see, that's where it gets interesting as well, because a lot of these things that we do, you know, we think meditation, we have to be perfectly still, and when we want to go deeper, that's the case. But what's really interesting is we can be active and moving, but when the mind is settled down and it's engaged with what it's doing and it's happy to be there, it just happens, doesn't it? You don't have to try. It's wonderful. And you don't have to be anybody when you're swimming laps back and forth. And it's not boring. Time disappears. See, this is the thing. That's why it's useful, sort of talking about cooking, talking about, you know, you'll have to be up here one day and talk about swimming. Wonderful. Anybody else got similar examples? Wow, okay. Very secretive crowd. Well, it's 8:09, so I've got a bit more to string this out. So, one of the other things... Oh, okay.
Well, you started just as I shut my hand in the air.
Okay.
I was going to suggest your favourite sutta.
Oh, gosh, that's another difficult one. Actually, my all-time favourite one is one that that virtually nobody's read. It's not one that doesn't stand out. It's called the Mahagasinga Sutta. I don't expect you to remember that, don't worry. and the basis of it is that the chief disciples of the Buddha, there's five or six of these guys, and, you know, they're in this beautiful forest. And, you know, it's sunset and, you know, the narrative sort of spreads it out and it's beautiful scenery. And they basically, you know, what leader of them said, you know, what can make this forest more beautiful? And what each of these monks basically do is describe, ironically, the good qualities that they admire, which happen to be the good qualities that they themselves have. So for one of them, it's the ability to meditate. For some of them, it's the ability to understand things as they really are. For some of them, it's the good qualities of the heart and everything else. And what's really beautiful about that particular text is that it doesn't set in stone what you're supposed to be as a monk or as a person, because quite a lot of the time we have role models that we create, people we aspire to, and that can be really helpful, but it can also be a big trap because we try to become that person. We try to not be ourselves. And this the whole gist of this sutta doesn't really contain anything like the Four Noble Truths or anything like, it's not even mentioned. What's special about this text is that it shows that who you are is what matters. The good qualities you have is what makes a forest more beautiful. So it's a text that virtually nobody talks about. It's not very academically interesting. But it's quite simple and poetic and quite beautiful in many ways. I think it's an imaginary if you want to look it up. I'm not sure. Yeah, but it's one of my favourites.
Is it saying that your qualities, who you are,
mm-hmm.
is perfect for who you are?
In a sense, yes. It's sort of saying that we're all different. So we don't need to become the Buddha. We don't need to become anybody. Who you are is who you are. And what are your strengths are your strengths. You don't have, you know, it's good to develop those and use those for your own development, for your own happiness, your own awakening, and everything else. You know, the problem is that we have an image of what a perfect monk or a perfect nun or a perfect practitioner or a perfect person should be, and we try to aspire to be that. And they're very artificial. You know, they never make a mistake. They never lose mindfulness. They never sort of, you know, their robes are always perfect and all, whatever. You know, that's just not very human. You know, it's embracing sort of who we are. So one of these monks was particularly good at remembering all the texts, and that was what he did. He wasn't actually really known for being a meditator or anything else. He was quite sort of junior in the scheme of things. But basically, they went to the at the end of the text, they went to the Buddha and sort of said, we've all got different answers, which one of us are right? And he said, you're all right. what makes them, you know, more beautiful is what's beautiful in you, basically. And you value that. The problem is very few people do. You know, that's kind of the thing. You kind of have to have a decent relationship with yourself before you can value those good things in you. So it can take time. But did that kind of answer the question? No? Right? For you, did it kind of clarify things? Okay.
What do you do all day in the month?
That's a great question, isn't it? Well, it varies. I mean, when I'm on retreat is different from when I'm not on retreat, and I will be soon, which is great, so I'll be disappearing for a while soon. Generally in the monastery, what's nice about Bodhinyana is that it's not a strict boom, boom, boom system. So it's not like the bell rings at 3:30 in the morning and up you get and there's morning chanting and there's this and this and this and this and this. A lot of it's kind of, you have to use your own energy. So it's kind of, there's a bit of a trap, is that if you're not careful, you can just sort of sleep in till 7 o'clock and, you know, just have it easy. And if you do that, you'll find yourself quickly in trouble because your energy and motivation will quickly disappear. You know, you'll get quite lethargic. But generally, you know, my alarm goes off at 4:30, so I'm up then. Then I go have my shower, then meditate in the morning or do a little bit of study, depending on what the weather's like. Because if you have the energy for meditation, great, do it. If you don't, it's not really best to do it because you're going to be fighting yourself. It's good to do something else. It might be cleaning your space, it might be a bit of study, it might be going for a walk, whatever is right at that time. And of course, that's something you experiment on and you look inwards and you ask yourself, what do I really need right now? And then after that, there's usually a breakfast on a work day, that is. You can have it on the weekend, but I don't. I'm usually staying in my hut at that point. Then we have our work meeting. And we work for part of the morning and then short break, shower, then there's lunch. And then the afternoon is basically more meditation. Then for the junior monks, there's a class on the monastic rules once a week. Once a week, there's usually a talk. And that's about it. Huh? You see, what's interesting is if you sit there and do nothing, your mind will start exposing itself to you. You know, you'll start to find out how good a friend you are to yourself. Because you'll quickly be going, I'm in a prison, get me out of here. Find something to do. Get a book, get a tablet, you know. You're constantly trying to get away from yourself. Whereas this is a slow, gentle way of getting yourself to yourself, so to speak. Yeah. When I'm on retreat, it's a similar timescale. It's just I don't go to the work meetings. I don't go to breakfast. I'm just generally completely on my own. Then might go for lunch unless a friend will bring lunch to me, which does happen occasionally. I tend not to ask them these days because we're all so busy and it's quite a thing to ask. But yeah, I could have. I look forward to those 2 weeks when the only interaction I have with people might be for 5-10 minutes. It's not being antisocial, it's just you love being on your own so much. It's wonderful. You don't have to be anyone. Does that kind of explain things?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all different. What works is what works.
So are you going somewhere for your retreat or staying at Bodhinyana?
Staying at Bodhinyana, yeah. You just go back to the hut and disappear. It's wonderful. Yeah. And you can do that kind of thing at home as well. If you have a spare room or something else, and even, believe it or not, walk-in cupboards are great for meditation. Walk-in cupboards, they're great, you know, especially if you've got a spare one, it's nice and quiet, and, you know, it's all mostly surround, so, you know, wonderful little space. And if you have a weekend off where you don't need to do anything and you're on your own, you can just put yourself a few, you know, pre-made meals in the fridge and the day is yours. Very nice. You know, and there's lots of talks and you know, guided meditations on the internet that you can download and listen to and help you along, and you can DIY as much as you like. It's wonderful. Yeah. Anyone else? Just a look is wonderful. All right. Well, it's 17 past 8, so I've got a bit longer to go. Was there any questions in the box or anything like that?
No.
Mm.
You can always finish early if you need.
Oh, well. I like to keep a bit to the system where I can. But, you know...
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, there's one last sort of interesting thing I'll kind of bring in is... you know, there's a great metaphor that Ajahn Brahm uses. You may have heard it before about putting the dung on the mango tree. You ever heard that one? No? Basically, the gist of it is that when you are walking along in life and you step into dog poo, you know, you can get upset about it and everything else, but one option is to scrape the dog poo off under a fruit tree, and it fertilizes it, and at the end of it, in a year's time, you'll have some nice fruit to enjoy. What's interesting about this metaphor is some people sometimes go a bit too far. Is what where the gardening metaphor comes in is, if you know what happens, if you have a truckload of dung, which happens to be one of the names of Ajahn's books in the US, if you dump it all on a tree all at once, what's going to happen to the tree? You're going to kill it. That's right. So you dig it in gradually, you spread it, in, so you can put a bit on the flowers, you put a bit on the fruit trees. You incorporate your troubles in a way that's more sort of wholesome rather than just trying to fix it all at once. And that way it's more diverse and it works a lot better. So it's a really great metaphor. If you remember that one from one of Ajahn's, that's a really good one to use. So there's lots of little gardening tricks that you can use that, you know, in your meditation, in your life, it's all there. Because there's not a lot of difference between the two. Mm. You have one? Nope, okay.
Any other questions?
Done. Oh well. In which case, it's 20 past. Shall we finish up?
Yes.
Thank you for having me.